It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and here on the frozen tundra, nothing is growing right now, but a lot of us are dreaming of the green of spring. This hour, we'll talk about New Year's resolutions for our gardens. We want to hear your resolutions. And of course, horticulturists Richard Duran and Cindy Haynes will answer your questions this hour. But we're going to start with the monarch butterfly, also something that's not fluttering around outside right now. But the monarch butterfly is in trouble. The numbers have declined dramatically in recent years. And now there's an effort underway to get the monarch listed on the endangered species list. It's a long process, and it has really just begun. Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis is here to help us understand the process and what it means. Hello, Donald.
Good morning to you, yes, Charity.
Very chilly. Good morning. Thank you so much for being here today. And there have been a kind of a flutter of news articles about the monarch butterfly in the last couple of weeks and this process. It's an effort to get the monarch listed on the endangered species list. Mm-hmm. But we are really just at the beginning of that process. Can you explain for us where this process is right now?
As I understand it, this is a process that several environmental groups began back in August of this last year, asking the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to consider putting the monarch butterfly on the endangered species list as a threatened species. Well, that's the first of about 11 steps, as I count it, that go into the process of becoming an endangered or threatened species, according to the federal definitions of those terms. And just at the end of last year, a week ago, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service jumped from step one to step two, and that is they have agreed with the petitioners that there is reason to investigate the monarch butterfly for consideration on the endangered species list as a threatened species. So it's a long process. It could take years to accomplish, but it has to start somewhere, and that's where we are right now.
And this step in the process is a step where the public can get in on the act, right?
Yes, they can, though if you read the fine print, there's a fairly specific set of questions that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is considering right at this point in time. And what they are seeking is, quote, scientific and commercial data, unquote. They're not so much looking for just public reaction. This isn't so much public opinion that they are seeking, but they have a list of very specific things that they are looking for at this point in time. And it's things like butterfly genetics and taxonomy. If you have something you could contribute, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service would like to hear from you. They're looking for things like thermotolerance range and microclimate requirements for the monarch butterfly. So this is a data gathering step more than just an opinion gathering step. They're also hoping to hear about what conservation measures have already been taken for the monarch butterfly, because if the monarch butterfly makes it to the threatened species list, there will be conservation measures put in place. And so putting together a list of what that might look like is going to be a long and hard process.
Last year, the numbers of monarch butterflies reached an all-time low, at least ever since we've been monitoring them, and probably that's probably forever. but they have bounced back a little bit this year. What do we know about the population at this point?
This is a long-term trend. It's been going on for a decade or more as a series of events are all conspiring against the monarch butterfly. One of those is loss of habitat at their overwintering site in south central Mexico. The one that we think about here in the upper Midwest is loss of breeding habitat. That particularly means roadside and field milkweeds, the only plant that the monarch butterfly will lay her eggs on and the only plant that the caterpillars will feed. And then we add to that bad weather. So we went through 3 years of bad weather for monarch butterfly reproduction in the upper Midwest, and the population crashed to what was considered to be an all-time low of about 33 million butterflies, making it to south central Mexico to spend the winter. We will not know the results of the 2014 breeding cycle until sometime in March when the official numbers are released. But the estimates coming out of Mexico right now are that the population has doubled from what it was a year ago, and that maybe we might have as many as 66 million monarch butterflies down there, which is still way, way below the average of the last 25 years or so.
Now, this process that we're involved in right now is said to take about a year to complete. So in about a year, it will be decided whether the monarch would be a threatened species or not?
I think that's optimistic. I think the designation of a threatened species carries with it lots of positives that we can think about. Anything that draws attention to a declining species, especially a declining species of butterfly, is a good thing. The designation will open up funding sources for ways to accomplish conservation. But there will also be those that see conservation measures as an intrusion if there aren't substantial incentives to accomplish the conservation efforts. People may feel that it's over-regulation by the government, telling them what they can and cannot do with their land. So I think this will become a political fight. I'm sorry to say that monarch butterflies could be pinched between politicians, but I don't think this will be an easy thing to figure out because of the consequences of whatever conservation measures are attached to the threatened species status.
We, of course, have seen a number of species get listed as threatened or endangered, and we've seen the outcome of that over the years. It seems to be a very powerful tool for protecting a species. But with an insect, it seems like it would be a lot harder to make a difference. I mean, it's not enough to say you can't shoot monarch butterflies because, of course, no one is shooting monarch butterflies.
That's right. But going back several years, there have been efforts by different groups, Monarch Watch is one, where the statement is we have to reestablish milkweed in the breeding grounds of the monarch butterfly, but now you're talking huge agricultural tracts that extend across the entire continent. In addition to trying to protect the monarch, we know that the western monarch on the other side of the Rocky Mountains from us is different from our Midwest monarchs, and then there's a different subspecies on the east coast. So it's going to be hard to write rules and regulations for this, but you're talking about a huge geographic area where there are huge financial interests that will have to be consulted and will have to agree to whatever measures come along. So I agree, this won't be as easy as saying, don't shoot bald eagles. This won't be as easy as reestablishing wolves into areas where they were eliminated previously. This will be an area that goes from coast to coast and from Mexico to northern Canada.
We've talked about this a number of times on the program, but let's talk about it again. If I'm concerned about monarch butterflies and I want to do something personally to at least provide them some habitat, what can I do?
You can plant milkweed. There are plenty of programs out there that will sell you milkweed seed in the event that you don't have a roadside where you can go gather the fluffy seed heads off of the milkweeds in the end of the season. It's a hard plant to transplant, but establishing milkweed is one way to do it. Working with legislators to increase conservation areas and to reestablish milkweed in areas that are set-aside acres, for example. But to many people, we're talking about a despicable weed when you say milkweed. So you've got that image to overcome. But individually, we can have milkweed in our backyards. We can do what we can to help the monarch reproduce. Our horticulture friends will talk about other varieties of milkweed. It doesn't have to be the common ditch milkweed. There's butterfly milkweed and other plants. So you can try. You can do what you can. I have to be realistic and think, yeah, my backyard's a pretty small area compared to the upper Midwest where milkweed used to exist in a lot larger acreage. But we do what we can. We work with others who are like-minded, and we hope to move the process forward.
Well, on the subject of our horticulture friends, let's bring them into the conversation. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here today. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Cindy Haynes, assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, is here. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here today. And we're going to talk about some New Year's resolutions for our gardens. Before we move away from insects, Donald, do you have any New Year's resolutions that you would like to make on behalf of our very tiny friends?
Well, my resolution is not to bug my friends, or when I feel I'm not wanted, I'll try to bug out. So, you know, my resolution for the year is to not louse up.
Oh, dear. How long did you work on these, Donald?
Oh, these happen just
naturally,
unfortunately.
Naturally. Yes.
Yep.
Well, Cindy, you are someone who likes to make a lot of resolutions. Richard, you are someone who doesn't like to make any.
Correct. That's correct.
Very true.
All right. But Richard, you did make a couple on our behalf.
Yes. I need to be more ruthless. By that, I mean I have some plants in my backyard which are not performing well, and I always think I'm going to take them out, but I never do.
What,
and
what
at some point,
prevents you?
The thought is that maybe one year they'll recover.
Maybe this year
and
they'll take off.
They'll take off.
Mm-hmm.
And they just never do. And one is kind of sickly. It doesn't bloom. It's like it needs to come out.
What,
so I think this year it will come out.
What is the plant?
It's a lilac.
Oh, yeah.
It actually isn't what it was supposed to be.
Oh.
So it's not even the right plant.
It's not the right plant. It's kind
of
sickly.
And you still won't take it out.
I won't. But I will this year, I think.
Oh, well, I'll come over and visit and I'll help you.
Gardeners are optimists.
This
we believe the best about our plants. That, no, I don't want to kill that plant. I bought it. I paid for it. I planted it. I'm sure it can do better.
But at some point, you have to let it go, I think. So I think this year.
All right. 2015 is the year to give up on that lilac bush. All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We want to hear your New Year's resolutions. Richard has another one to share. Cindy has a whole list.
She does.
We do want to hear your resolutions. You can also call with questions. Donald Lewis is going to stick around for a few more minutes. So if you have questions about the monarch butterfly or any other insect questions, if you have resolutions to share or any questions about the plants in your life, give us a call. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. And with me this hour, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, Richard Giron, Horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension, and Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension Entomologist. And you are welcome to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're talking right now about New Year's resolutions for our gardens. We will talk about them throughout the hour. We'd love to hear your resolutions and also your questions. And Cindy, why don't you give us one of your resolutions before we get to the phones?
One of my resolutions is to get out in the garden more, just to get out and take photographs and be aware of what's happening. And I'm thinking that means less paperwork.
Is that something you get to just decide?
No, unfortunately, but I'll just postpone it and it the paperwork won't go away. So, but the garden flowers, they transition. So I need to get out and enjoy it more.
All right. Seize the moment in the garden, then. I think that's a good one for all of us. Let's take a question. We'll talk more about resolutions in a moment. Tim is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I have a question for Dr. Lewis. I get egg cases, praying mantis egg cases from northern Pennsylvania every year, and they do well, mm-hmm. but I never get any reproduction at the end of the season, and I was wondering why that is.
Oh, I think it's a tough life to be a praying mantis here in the Midwest, and the one that you're probably buying is the Chinese mantid.
Yes.
That's a southern species. We don't normally see them establish and stay established here in the, at least in the middle of Iowa. And especially in a year like this, where we've had these sub-zero temperatures, any praying mantid eggs that were laid last year have probably perished, so they freeze to death. But if you're not finding eggs at the end of the season, who knows what's going on? Of course, for eggs to be laid, the male and female have to find each other, so they had to have enough habitat, enough food for at least two individuals of different sexes to make it through the year in your yard, and then they had to find each other. I just think it's such an uphill climb for these things that aren't really adapted for our area to survive and make it. So continuing to buy egg cases is likely to be your hobby for the foreseeable future.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Tim, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call. Lori is on the line in Des Moines with her New Year's resolution. Hi, Lori.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just moved to this urban area, and my little garden patch, my resolution is to bring that soil back alive. I can't even find bugs in it. I put in some earthworms. I bought some and put in earthworms at this fall, but what else can I do to bring that soil alive?
Add organic matter. That would be beneficial. Things like compost, if you need large quantities, barnyard manure, sphagnum peat moss, but organic matter would be the...
Or start a compost pile so that you have a source for the future, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those are all good suggestions. It's kind of hard to get manure up here into Des Moines.
Right, but in Des Moines, you do have the composting facility near Southeast Polk High School, and they do sell the material, so you could actually buy some.
Oh, great. And could your etymologist please describe the chrysalis of a monarch? They're so beautiful.
Oh, yes. Of course, monarchs and all butterflies go through that four stages of egg, larva, pupa, and adult. And in the case of butterflies, we have special terminology. We call the pupa also the chrysalis or the chrysalid. And when the monarch caterpillar has eaten all the milkweed it can and grown to about 2.5 inches in length, it pulls itself into this emerald green shield-shaped, shield cylindrical shape, and that's where the miracle of metamorphosis takes place, as what was once a caterpillar is digested and remanufactured into the monarch butterfly over a period of several weeks. But hanging there as this emerald green with the little gold dots, they really are a spectacular sight.
Yes, they're beautiful. Okay, thank you very much.
Lori, thank you so much for your call. And talking about bringing the soil back to life for Lori, how long a process is that? I mean, I'm sure she can get something to grow this year, but how long does it take to really reinvigorate a patch like that?
It may take a year or more, but the main thing is to add the organic matter, apply it to the area, and then incorporate it into the actual soil. Don't just leave it on top.
We're talking a lot of work.
Well, you need a tiller to do that, a heavy-duty tiller, but you can actually make some marked improvements by doing that.
Well, I find, Donald, that a lot of gardening takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's your resolution is to work more.
Right.
I get it.
every year. But that's always, you do all the work in the spring to get stuff planted, and then...
You reap the benefits.
Think of it as exercise.
There's so much more work to
do. It's exercise. See, it's good exercise to do this.
My resolution is to try to stay on top of the weeds. I'm so bad about it. And then once I get really behind, I just get discouraged. And then I just think, I don't really want to walk over into that part of the yard anymore.
Right.
So. It's amazing how fast weeds grow. I mean, you wouldn't think they would, but they definitely do. And before you know it, they're producing seeds. So you just have to get them before they do that.
All right. This year's the year. Richard, you have another resolution. What is your next one?
To buy only what I need as far as bedding plants. In the spring when you go to a greenhouse, you see all these bedding plants. I'm like a kid in a candy store. I buy way too many plants, and then I have extras, and I try to find places to put them. It's hard to do. So just buy what I need. I need to do that.
All right. Good luck.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard.
866-780-9100 is the number to call to share your resolutions or to ask questions about insects or plants in your life. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. On the subject of staying on top of weeds, though, what kind of system do you guys find works well for you, for those of us who fail year after year after year?
Well, basically, get them when they're small. And when you do till, do it fairly shallow so you're not bringing up more weed seed to the surface. Use mulches. Mulches are very, very beneficial in that many of your weed seeds, like annual weed seeds, they need light for germination. Mm-hmm. If they don't receive light, they don't germinate. So definitely use the mulches, wood chips, shredded bark, grass clipping, shredded leaves, whatever. That helps a lot.
How often do you go out there and make sure that you're on top of it?
You probably should go out there every 2 weeks at least and make sure you're on top of it.
That doesn't sound so bad. I guess 2 weeks goes by awfully fast.
It does. It does when you're busy with things, other things right around the house. But if you do it every couple of weeks or so, you should be able to take care of that. And then if you keep on top of it, you will notice over time there are fewer weeds because there's fewer weed seeds to germinate. So if you keep on top of it, in 2 or 3 years, you will see a decline in the number of weed seeds germinating. So that helps.
You have to play the long game.
Yes.
What's your next resolution, Cindy?
Besides weeds, which I'm not very good at staying on top of either, it's going bold this year. Maybe planting a bunch of bold annuals, you know, big colors and trying some things that are a little bit different. To attract some attention. So
I know we did a whole hour about purple plants last year, but did you feel that things were just a little dull in your yard last year?
I think I didn't plant enough of those bright colors. So especially in the front yard where I've got a new bed and some space to plant some of the bigger things like canna or even castor bean or some of those kind of, you know, more unusual things. Including the, you know, the burgundy colors and maybe contrasting it with some of that chartreuse or yellow or orange even is very popular. So
866-780-9100 is the number for you to call to join our conversation today. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got room on the phone lines for you right now. And before we go back to the phones, how about one more from you, Cindy?
One more is putting some veggies in my front garden, too. So that's where the sun is. So being bold with some vegetables right there in the front so that I can harvest my lettuce at my mailbox, maybe.
And what's what's holding you back from doing that?
Well, rabbits and deer could be one of them. And I think it's just the perceptions that the vegetable garden shouldn't be in the front yard. So that it, you know, some of those vegetables are not very attractive. They're not very ornamental. So trying to figure out how to make vegetables attractive and ornamental or fit into that ornamental landscape. And there are some that will work.
And I think that this is a trend. We are seeing more people making an edible landscape or putting vegetables in their front yards. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's something that's just going to grow in acceptance too? I mean, it can be hard to do something that you think your neighbors might say, that doesn't look so good.
You want to do it and you want to do it well. And then that encourages more people to do it. So it's I think it's important to select those vegetables that have the potential to look good in the front yard. I'm not sure okra will ever be one of those vegetables that looks good in the front yard. So, you know, that's my first step. And then I think, you know, then there is a trend to be a little more productive and produce more of your own food. And sometimes that means in the front yard.
Let's go back to the phones. Lucy is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, I have a question. We have one of those bushes that say they're for butterflies. It flowers orange all summer long. Mm-hmm. And last fall, there was a ton of very large green caterpillars, like on every branch. And then the next day, they were all gone. I'm wondering what those caterpillars were and where they all went.
Well, good thing I have horticulturists around. Do you think she's talking about Mexican sunflower?
No.
No?
No.
Large bush with orange flowers all year.
Well, all summer.
All summer.
It's not really a bush. It dies back.
Is it butterfly weed?
Not butterfly.
Or butterfly
weed.
Bush.
It's not a butterfly bush. These are orange, really pretty flowers all summer long.
Well, while the horticulturists are coming up with a plant name, let's talk about the life cycle of the butterfly that caterpillars don't get around. They pretty much have to stay where they were, where mom laid the egg is where the caterpillars are going to grow. What's interesting, and every tomato grower has gone through this experience of you don't see anything, you don't see anything, you don't see anything, and suddenly there's a large tomato hornworm eating a leaf an hour off of your tomato plant. So the caterpillars that seem to appear were probably there all along, but as early instars, they were just very small and didn't attract a lot of attention because they weren't eating a lot. And it could be that you were there and caught them at the end of that development. So it's not totally out of the norm for people to not notice caterpillars until they're large, and then about the time you notice them, they're ready to make the transformation. I still don't know what a green
orange
caterpillar would be.
Okay. I was going to say, I think I have the plant.
Oh, what's that?
Orange glory butterfly plant. It says masses of orange flowers all summer. Few flowers have more decorative value in the summer garden than the orange glory butterfly plant.
And what is the host?
That's probably it.
What's a caterpillar that feeds on orange glory?
Oh, that is not information that I found.
Oh,
I got halfway there. Come on.
I figured once you Googled the plant, you would have Googled the pest list as well.
Can you give us a scientific name for orange glory?
Asclepias tuberosa.
Yeah, so it's a butterfly weed. So it is a butterfly milkweed. So it could very well be.
It could have been monarchs.
Yeah.
I don't think of them as green. I think of them as striped black, yellow, and white.
No.
But there's a whole lot more to choose from. And this is the point where we put in a pitch for the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic and our ability to work miracles, both horticulturally, entomologically, and disease-wise, with digital images from your cell phone. So when you see the caterpillars next year, be sure and send us a digital image, and we'll be better able to, we'll sound a little smarter when we can give you the name.
I will definitely do that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call, Lucy. And Donald, I know we have to let you go in just a few minutes, so another monarch question for you from Randy in Des Moines. Hi, Randy.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I was wondering, I've got a couple of acres just outside of Des Moines here and plenty of room for milkweed. Short of harvesting them from like the river, the edge of the river, is there stores around town that sell those type of seeds so I could get them going this year?
Not yet, but my guess is there will be entrepreneurs who see this. Garden centers do sell butterfly milkweed and sometimes swamp milkweed, and we just heard about this Asclepias orange glory butterfly plant. That is a milkweed. So there are prairie plants. The prairie outlet people have available those plants. Garden centers will sell those native plants. But if you go to a website called Monarch Watch, one word, Monarch Watch, I think it's a .org, they have... they have milkweeds that they are selling and distributing around the country as part of this process of encouraging milkweed planting. So there are sources, but it's not going to be easy to find common milkweed just yet.
All right. A Monarch Watch. I'll have to give that a try.
Yeah.
All right, Randy. All right. Thank you very much for your call. And we have this email. This is from Vicky. One thing we here in Iowa can do is lobby our secondary roads departments and county supervisors to order and scatter milkweed seeds in our ditches under their roadside management programs. And that's something we've talked about in the past, Donald, that milkweed seeds are not always included in prairie mixes or in the mix that is given to farmers who are putting their or sold to farmers who are putting their land into CRP. Is this something where you think that there can be some lobbying to make sure that milkweed is included in those kind of mixes?
Oh, I think this will be a political process for a few years to come, and conservation mixes that are sold by the NRCS, this endangered species effort, all of these things are likely to be in this process of the comments and how are we going to accomplish this if it is, if monarch does become a threatened species. There will be programs put in place, and it may be programs that encourage farmers to do more set aside and to include milkweed in that. So yes, lobbying politicians is always a possibility, and you're fighting an uphill battle when you walk in and say, I want to plant more weeds, because the immediate reaction is going to be, no, no, we just got rid of weeds. Why do you want to bring them back? Well, for this very specific purpose of promoting monarchs, we may be able to accomplish that. So I hope we do.
You know, on Tuesday, we talked about some wildlife comeback stories in Iowa with wildlife biologists Jim Pease and Bruce Ayersman. And we were talking about some of the animals that people have gotten excited about bringing back and willing to invest in. And it seems to me that monarch butterflies, although they're small, they do really touch a chord with people. They seem to be something that people can really get on board with.
I think the phrase that ecologists frequently use is charismatic megaflora.
Right.
Or megafauna in this case, that these are things that people notice and love, and we can exploit that. Sure.
I think butterflies may be charismatic microfauna.
Yeah. Okay.
Medium fauna? I don't
Medium
know.
Medium fauna. Your term, your radio show, you get to make up whatever words you want.
Donald Lewis, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity. Always a pleasure.
We will continue the conversation with Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes, and we're saying goodbye now to Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. We'd love to hear from you as well. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Today we've been talking about New Year's resolutions for our gardens, and we'd love to hear your resolutions and also your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, is here, along with Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. And let's go to the phones. Sally is on the line in Marshalltown. Hi, Sally.
Hi. I have a question about some bulbs, but I also just wanted to put in a mention, since you were talking about monarchs so much, that in Marshalltown, our public library and our community college have been making a real effort to plant native, drought-tolerant, prairie-type plants in their plantings, including butterfly milkweed and other plants that are native. And I think by all the people in around the country realizing planting more of these native plants will provide habitat, and they're very beautiful. We've had lots of positive comments from the public about how pretty it is, has been attracting, you know, more butterflies and things.
Oh, that's terrific.
But I had a question. I was comforted to know that other people are a little over optimistic or enthusiastic like me, and I bought some bags of different kinds of spring blooming bulbs that I did not get planted this fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering some different things that I might be able to do to possibly preserve them to plant in the spring. I was thinking of maybe putting some in pots and trying to force a few, and didn't know if I could replant them after that at some point. And then the other ones, should I keep them in the refrigerator? What should I do with them? Will they be viable?
Yeah, forcing them would be your best option, where you pot them up, because they don't store very well long term. And so if they go unplanted, I think by spring they'll probably shrivel up and die. So they need to be potted up, and then watered in, and then put in a cool place like a refrigerator or possibly a cool garage. And they need to stay there for basically 12 weeks at least. And then they could be taken out. And then at that point, that would be basically the rest of January, February, and March. You could take them out, and you could actually dig a hole, set the pot in the ground, and let them grow and bloom. And then once they die back, let them die back. Then you could take them out of the pot and put them in the actual ground. So you could do that. But long term, they just don't store well. And if they're left unplanted by spring, they'll basically be most likely dead. So they need to be potted up.
Thank you.
All right, Sally, thanks a lot for your call. Good luck.
Thanks.
I know you're not alone at having unplanted bulbs.
Yeah, it always sneaks up on us.
Yeah,
it happens.
I was very proud of myself for getting them in the ground this year. My son loves flowers, and so he got a lot of bulbs for his birthday in October, which was great. But then I knew I had to get them in the ground, and I did it. I did it. All right, let's. Here's an email. This is from Ellen. She says, "My resolution is to prune on time."
Ooh.
Tell us again when trees should be pruned and when bushes such as hydrangeas and honeysuckle and grapevines should be pruned.
Well, for most trees, I prefer to prune those in late winter. That's basically late February, early to mid-March. You can do it as late as bud break, but try to do it sometime late winter, early spring for most trees. As far as grapevines, the same thing, basically late winter. You want to do that. On the shrubs, it kind of depends upon when they bloom, how much pruning is necessary. If you have things like a burning bush or some other plant that doesn't really have attractive flowers, I would definitely prune those again, probably late February or March. If you have something like a lilac and you want to do some light pruning, I would wait and prune them immediately after blooming. And if you have something like a vine, like a clematis, I would probably wait until they begin to leaf out and then prune out all the dead wood.
What if you have a lilac and you want to do some heavy pruning?
Then I would probably go out in March and sacrifice some of the bloom. And I would go out there and maybe select four or five of the largest, biggest ones and try to cut those out near ground level. And then you'll still have some younger branches to produce the blooms. And then maybe the next year, take out a few more.
Ellen, this is one of my resolutions too, because I have a lilac bush, as you could guess probably by that. This is year five of planning to do some serious pruning on this one very overgrown lilac bush that doesn't bloom particularly well anyway. I love it and I want it to be there, but I'd like it to be a little more productive too.
Take out some of the old ones, yes.
All right, this year for sure. Back to the phones. Helen is on the line in Ames. Hi, Helen.
Hi, I was wondering where you can buy compost in Ames, and they'll deliver it.
That may not be a question we can answer today, but any ideas?
There are a couple of places in town that collect plant debris. I can't give you the names of the firms, but in the fall of the year, for example, citizens in Ames can bring their yard waste, their leaves, to the site, which is basically south on University Avenue or Boulevard.
You mean Friel Drive?
And then there's also a site in Friel Drive also, too. So you could try those two locations. They do collect yard waste, and they do compost it, so you could try there.
All right. So if they're collecting it, they probably sell it,
too. Yes, they probably do.
And this is from Joe at the Iowa Arboretum in Madrid, and he says that we will have lots of milkweed as well as many other butterfly-attracting plants in our plant sale the first weekend in May. Mm-hmm. Our spring plant sale theme is feeding the pollinators.
Oh, cool.
So, and, you know, I noticed a lot of nature centers in the Arboretum, things like that, places like that in Iowa seem to be investing in making sure that these native plants are available. So definitely check out the Arboretum. But I think look around in your area. You can probably find some milkweed that someone is selling locally. Let's go back to the phones. Mike is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. You hit on one of my pet peeves as you were talking about keeping native plants for the insects. I have a very strong pet peeve with the fact that my neighbors, I live in the country, spend hours and hours and hours mowing their ditches. And I have a farmer that probably mows 5 or 6 miles, both sides of the road, the ditches. And there's nothing, you know, what lives there now has nothing that will help birds or insects, butterflies. There is legislation that it's not legal, but our county engineer will not enforce it.
Right. The mowing of ditches has to take place after, is it July 15th or something like that at this point?
Yeah, even later than that. But these guys are just out mowing, so they have pretty ditches.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks for sharing that. And that's, you know, that's a New Year's resolution that I think a lot of us could get behind. Mow less.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm with you. I'm adding it right now.
All right. Perfect. This is from Jordan. He says, I have a small organic vegetable farm in Johnston. This will be my sixth growing season. Every year we plant our fall crops too late. My resolution is to plant my fall garden early this year. My Amish friends have a saying, wet or dry, plant your fall garden by the 25th of July. Have you heard that one?
I haven't, but
I haven't either.
But that's a nice one.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Jonah is on the line in Omaha. Hello.
Hi. Couple of real quick things. You can order milkweed plants and seeds online from a place called Prairie Nursery.
Mm-hmm.
That's another source if you don't have anything locally. My other questions are, how can I get rid of yellow nutsedge in my flower garden? I've tried pulling before the first, you know, the longest day. I've tried sedge hammer, and it just keeps, I mean, I might as well have a nutsedge garden. And the other one is, any ideas on some kind of plants I can plant around the base of a maple? Those surface roots just make it awful.
Yeah, they do have
it's in the shade.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as the nutsedge, that's a very, very difficult plant to control as far as weed. The reason being that when you pull it, and it pulls fairly easily, there are small little baby nutlets, and they typically pull off and they stay in the ground. So when you pull the plant, you get the mother plant, but you leave behind the baby nutlets, and then they sprout. So the key there with nutsedge is to be very, very persistent. Keep on doing it. As soon as it comes up, pull it out. Keep on pulling it out. Never let it go to seed, but keep on pulling it out, and you have to just be persistent. It's probably going to take a year or two, possibly longer, for you to get rid of it, but you have to be persistent. So that's the key on that.
As far as the maple, there are some ground covers, some perennial ground covers that will tolerate those conditions. We usually plant them when they're really small, so you're not doing a lot of damage to the site or digging a really big hole. Things like perennial vinca or barren strawberry might be a couple that you would look at. They will tolerate that shade, and you have to keep them going and get them established for a year or two before they fill in. Other options are just to mulch. And not plant anything, or maybe place a few containers with plants, you know, with impatiens or something underneath to add some color.
A couple other options might be creeping lily turf,
mm-hmm.
Which is a very tough, resilient plant. Maybe lily of the valley, which is mm-hmm. another very tough plant. And there are some cultivars of hostas, mm-hmm. some cultivars, some species like Hosta lancifolia, that are very, very aggressive, very tough too. So,
all right. Thank you so much for your call and good luck with that. Jim is on the line next in Bettendorf at 866-780-9100. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Good morning.
Yeah. What would you like to talk about?
I have a small prairie flower garden in my backyard on a hillside. It's turned out really nice this year. But this fall, I discovered that there were a lot of either gophers or chipmunks or some kind of small animal like that, and they've chewed off the roots of the coneflowers and sunflowers. What's the best way to control or get rid of those?
Well, I think the first thing would be to identify what the pest is, as far mm-hmm. as what kind of animal it is. If you have, for example, gophers, well, what they tend to do is they leave these big mounds of dirt that you would see on the surface. They might be 2 feet in diameter or more. And if you have these big mounds of dirt, then you may have gophers. And if you have gophers, basically trapping would be the best way to get rid of them,
okay.
where you physically trap them and destroy them. If you have like a ground squirrel or a chipmunk, typically what you would see on that would be small openings, holes in the ground.
That's basically what I see.
Okay. And I suppose if you wanted to get rid of those, you could use a live trap and bait the trap and then remove them and put them elsewhere.
put them elsewhere.
Right.
Okay.
Take them elsewhere.
Right. Well, good luck, Jim. And Cindy, that actually brings up one of your New Year's resolutions.
Yes, is to live with the rabbits and the deer and not worry about them as much. I can tell you I'm not going to do well on that one.
Right. It's a really hard problem for a lot of people because you do want to live in peace with them. But right. If you're a gardener, often they eat what you plant. And that's really frustrating.
It is. And I have hungry rabbits in my area.
Any other type?
I guess not.
All right. Marcy is on the line next in Mechanicsville. It's a good Zen, though, resolution.
It is. I'm trying anyway.
Marcy, what would you like to talk about?
Hi. Well, first, I want to tell you one way to obtain that resolution is to get chickens, because your chickens will also destroy everything.
And then I won't have anything to worry about.
Okay. But you'll love your chickens. So there you go.
Fences are my best friend, I can tell you that.
My question is actually about a windbreak. We live out in the country and I'm surrounded by fields, and it's a new house, and we have no windbreaks. And as I mentioned before, we have chickens, and it is miserable going out to the coop every day in this wind.
Imagine how they feel. Goodness.
Oh no, they're fine. Okay. They've got heaters and yeah, they're fine. It's just a trip there. But we would like something, if there is such a thing, something easy growing and quick growing.
Okay. Do you have a lot of space?
Quite a bit. Yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking basically evergreen and things like white pine, Norway spruce. They are big trees that can get to be 40, 45, 50 feet tall, and maybe 25, 30 feet wide. So you need a lot of space, but they would provide that shelter basically year round. You could also put in maybe some shrubs if you had the space. I'm thinking maybe dogwoods, lilacs, possibly, maybe ostrichs, which are very fast growing willows. Mm-hmm. So if you have the space, you could put in multiple rows and have some evergreens and some deciduous trees and shrubs.
Okay. At what stage would you buy those, like the white pines, or because that's kind of what my husband had in mind,
right?
To buy like a white pine or a Scotch pine, and
as big as you can afford. Is that
as big as you can afford? Now, obviously, when you're putting in a windbreak and you need like maybe 25, 50, or 100. You can't go to your.
What we would need.
you really can't go to your garden center because they're going to have landscape type trees that
right,
are bigger,
okay.
More expensive. You're going to have to go to a company that maybe specializes in windbreak plants. These are going to be smaller. They might be bare root, and so you're going to have to give them good care. But eventually, they'll grow into the nice plants. So, I would see if you can find a source of maybe some seedling or bare root plants, possibly.
Okay. Gosh darn it, that's exactly what my husband said, and I should just listen to him. I call him the Lorax for one reason or other. All right. Okay, thank you.
Marcy, thank you so much for your call, and good luck with that. And we have time just for this comment. This is from Matt on Facebook. I collected milkweed seeds, and I've stored them in a plastic bag. Is that a viable form of storage, and when do I seed them? Do I seed them when I start the other seeds?
I would be inclined maybe to sow them on some potting soil and then watering them in, just covering them very, very lightly with additional potting soil, and then maybe put them in the refrigerator for maybe a month or so, and then bringing them out and giving them room temperature.
Okay, and when should he do this?
Probably later on in the spring, maybe around March or so.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And good luck with your resolutions, both of you.
Yes, thanks for helping me add to them.
Yeah, no problem. We'll talk again in a couple of weeks. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.